Thank you for tuning in to this special interview from the campus of the Free Lutheran Bible College and Seminary in Plymouth, Minnesota. I'm Josh Johnson, Director of Communications. Our interview today features an alumnus who is faithfully serving God's kingdom in his unique vocations. He was recently named superintendent of the Hillsboro, North Dakota School District. Today's guest is John Dryberg. John grew up in Fordville, North Dakota. After graduating high school, he spent a year at Northwestern College in Roseville, Minnesota, and then completed the two-year program here at the Free Lutheran Bible School. He went on to Valley City State University, where he graduated magna cum laude with a bachelor's degree in education. And for the last 28 years, he has worked as a professional educator in North Dakota, first teaching in Grand Forks and then Grafton. Since 2013, he served as principal of Hillsboro Elementary School. During this stint, he completed a master's degree in educational leadership. John has served Schaeberg and Drayton Lutheran Churches as a lay pastor since 2007. He is married to Jennifer, and together they have six adult children. John, welcome to the studio.
Well, thank you for having me.
I know most of your children, and I've been impressed as I observe them, their ability to manage multiple responsibilities at once. I'm starting to see, after looking at this bio, where they get that from.
Yeah, I've had a lot of jobs over the years, and sometimes multiple jobs at the same time. So it's good now as I move into being a superintendent this summer. The thought of maybe just having one or two jobs, and not maybe at some point not having a second job. So we'll see where the Lord leads.
I'm looking forward to learning more of your story. Before we get into your career and callings, could you share a bit of your testimony, how you came to faith in Christ?
I grew up in a Christian home, and really started to think about my own faith in fifth grade. I was at Park River Bible Camp that summer as a camper, and just really loved seeing the faith of the counselors and the program director. And after my seventh grade year of junior high, I wasn't planning to go to camp again, and some people from the church invited me to camp, and it started that afternoon, and so I went, and then the counselor that summer talked to me and said, you know, would you like to come back for what at that point were called developmentally disabled weeks? And so I went back as a volunteer, and I think I served 3 weeks as a volunteer that summer. Did the same thing the following summer. Just had a wonderful time helping those disabled campers and the counselors with them. And then in my freshman year of high school, the camp director asked if I would consider being a counselor in training that summer. And so I decided I would. I'd be interested in that. And I think I probably got my application in too late, but I did get the job. And when I was starting then that summer, I started thinking about something a Sunday school teacher had told me that previous year, is that if you want to know God's will for your life, read the book of Proverbs. And I have never given that advice to anybody. In all my years, I've just never said start with the book of Proverbs, right? But that's what he told me, and so I did. And I saw Proverbs chapter 1, verse 7, the beginning of knowledge is fear of the Lord. And I thought to myself, I don't really know that I fear God, that I have that awesome respect for him. So that was kind of the beginning of finding God in his word. And when I went home that fall, I was kind of depressed because I had left all my Christian friends at camp, and a lot of them had gone back to college, and I was back in high school as a sophomore in high school. And so it was a struggle for that year, but I learned a lot of just relying on God and studying his word. And then it kind of continued. I spent a total of 5 summers at Park River Bible Camp. Got to know, like, Rod Quanbeck has roots in the AFLC, and a few other camp counselors were also from the AFLC. And so I knew about the Bible school. My parents started going to the Free Lutheran Church in Park River, and eventually Pastor James Rasmussen was serving that church. And when I went to Northwestern, I kind of did it because they had the dual degrees. You could get a Bible degree and a bachelor's degree. And while I was there in the spring of that year, I was in the college choir while I was there too, so absolutely loved that. But spring of the year, Pastor James Rasmussen came down and took me to a Twins game. And as we were sitting there, he started asking me some doctrinal questions and what had I heard. And I said I hadn't really heard the things he was saying. But then when I went back to class in the coming weeks, I started hearing it and started recognizing it. And then he had talked to my parents a little bit, I think, as well, and they were okay with me coming to the Bible school at that point. And so that was the transition. And it really took me a year and a half here at Bible school before I really started to understand the grace of God in a little different way. And I think it was Pastor Haugen, one of Pastor Haugen's classes that second year, where I started to really understand the book of Galatians and Ephesians and Romans, and saw Ephesians 2:8-9, for by grace you've been saved through faith, that not of yourselves, it's a gift of God, not as a result of works, that no one should boast. And that really opened a different understanding for me of what faith was and who I was as a believer. And so that was a great transition. That spring here at Bible school, I started to read see all kinds of verses differently. And then when I graduated from Bible school, my wife and I were getting married the following month in June. And so we were planning to go to Valley City State. And my now brother-in-law said, you know, I think my dad might be looking for a pastor's assistant. So Terry Olson, Pastor Terry Olson, was the pastor in Valley City at that point, and he was looking, or the church was looking for a pastor's assistant. So I didn't initially start out working with the youth. I started working with, you know, some of the elderly people in swing bed in the nursing home, and just doing some visitation with him, and then worked with the youth a little bit as well. But that turned into a 3-year time of being a pastor's assistant, which was phenomenal experience for me. It got me through college. Took 3 years to get through Valley City State, and during that time, I worked the whole time as a pastor's assistant and worked under Pastor Terry Olson for a year, and then Pastor Walter Johnson was an interim pastor, and then Pastor Joel Rolfe came. So got three different perspectives from three different veteran pastors, so it was good. And then when I went, you know, I don't know how, so my testimony is simply that God was the one leading through his word and teaching me about his grace. And I think that was the key to that's the key to my testimony. So
I wanted to ask, to see the Lord working in your life through high school and college. But your time here at the Bible school got off to a little bit of a rocky start. Can you tell us about that?
It did. Yeah. There were a group of us that decided it was a good idea to go study for a test at Perkins. And so we made the mistake of inviting too many people. I think there were probably 10 to 12 of us at Perkins that night. And when we got back, you know, we snuck in, but one of the members of our group just cracked under pressure and we all got found out. So my parents got a phone call saying that I'd gotten 50 demerits, and they called me and said, you know, John, you were the one that wanted to go there. And so if you want to go there, you probably should follow their rules. And from that point on, I did, and then ended up being a resident assistant the following year. So probably because I'd gone to Northwestern for a year, so I was 1 year older than most of the other second year students. But yeah, it was a mistake, and I learned from it. I guess that's the way to put it. So
God used that too.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you're in Valley City, finishing your bachelor's degree. Had this amazing experience, mentored by these men, these pastors at the church there. And thinking back to that time, what seeds were planted by those men and that role serving in that congregation that maybe came and bore fruit later in your ministry?
Well, the thing I learned from Pastor Terry Olson was just how to visit with people, and I think that's had a tremendous impact in my career, both as an educator and as a pastor, that I can sit and visit with people. I can call them on the phone and visit with them. I don't, you know, it's not an issue. And then when you get to the end of your visiting time, you ask if you can share some scripture and pray. And that's been a great blessing over the years to be able to do that with various people, family members and friends and people in my churches and those kinds of things. When I graduated from Valley City State, there were some people that thought I should be going right to seminary. And, you know, I wrestled with that a little bit. I didn't include in the bio, but when I started here at Bible school, I was looking for a job. And I found a job at a daycare working with two-year-olds and absolutely loved it and loved those kids. And I would work with the two-year-olds from about 1 o'clock when they were sleeping. I would go in when they were sleeping. I was actually taking Psalms and Proverbs one of those semesters or quarters or whatever. And so I would sit down with my little pocket Bible and I'd read through 5 Psalms a day when I was at work. And then the kids would start waking up and I'd put my pocket Bible away and then I'd read them stories until we had about between 7 and 14 kids that were awake. And then I'd take them into a different room and play with them, and the ones that were sleeping could continue sleeping. But just really enjoyed that time at the daycare and working with young people. And that's really where the passion for education. Both my parents were teachers as well, so my dad always encouraged me not to become a teacher, you know, and I don't think I disappointed him when I said I wanted to be a teacher, but I think the fire was lit inside me with just how much I enjoyed being with children. So then when I graduated from Valley City State, that passion was still there. I wanted to be a fifth grade teacher. I had a Spanish minor, and Grand Forks was looking for a Spanish teacher to work with elementary students. And it was a brand new program, and I was in over my head. And I often tell people if it hadn't been for the flood of 97, I probably would have quit teaching and gone to seminary.
Was that the first year you were in Grand Forks?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
Yep. And we had built a house between Amarillo and Thompson, so our house wasn't flooded, but then the school at the base, at the air base, they called and asked if I would be willing to teach fifth grade for the month of May. So I did that and found again that just thrill of teaching. So continued teaching Spanish for another 4 years and then kind of decided, I talked to Dr. Munseth a little bit about seminary, and you know, he shared that verse, I think it's from Psalm 37, about how God gives us the desires of our hearts. And that verse has always kind of stuck with me, but I had told the principal at one of my schools that spring that I wasn't going to be back in the fall. I'd made the decision I was either going to be teaching fifth grade or another grade, or I'd be at seminary. And then there was an opening, and I called the principal and asked if I could drop my resume off. That was end of June, beginning of July, and she said I could, and within an hour I was at that school with a shirt and tie on, and I dropped my resume off, and she called me about an hour later and said the assistant superintendent had said I could shift positions. So that was I taught fifth grade then in Grand Forks for 2 years. We moved to Grafton. Then I taught in Grafton for another 10 years and kind of bounced between sixth grade and fifth grade a little bit. So, but it was good. Then in 2007, so I'd been in Grafton for about 5 years, maybe it was even 2006. Mark Presting approached me and just asked if I would be willing to go up to Roseau to serve Rose and Spruce Free Lutheran Churches until they found a pastor. So kind of as an interim pastor. And they were just looking for somebody for Sunday mornings. And so I did, and that was before Pastor Todd Erickson received the call from them. And he started then at the end of May, but I served up there from October, first Sunday in October, I think it was, until the end of May. And just loved it. You know, I'd done a lot of fill-in preaching for pastors when they were gone on vacation and things like that over the years, but really enjoyed that time up in Roseau. And so then when I got back, so when I was done in May, that following January, I received a call. I think in December we'd gone out to Bismarck, and there was a free church in Bismarck at the time, and I preached there, and then they extended a call to me. And so then I really had to wrestle with that. Does God want me to be a pastor? And there's a verse, I think it's, I didn't look this one up to make sure I had it right, but I think it's in 2 Corinthians chapter 5, maybe verse 12, where it says, my grace is sufficient for you. And I really felt like God was saying, it's okay for you to be a pastor. But I didn't feel comfortable with the call to Bismarck. And so I turned down that call, but had the knowledge that God was okay with me being a pastor. And I didn't know how that was all going to work out, but about 2 weeks after I'd turned that call down, the church I grew up in Fordville, called and wondered if I'd come and be their interim pastor. So I went there from about the first Sunday in March until the end of July. Then they got a pastor, and then when I was done there, within a week or so, Drayton called and wondered if I'd come up there and be their pastor. And they weren't really sure how long it would last, but I said, well, I'm willing to, but I said, I'd like to have a Wednesday night Bible study as well. And they said, well, we'd love that. So that's how the things at Drayton started. And we were living in Grafton at the time, so that was 20 miles away. And then when we ended up moving to Hillsborough in 2013, that was a little further, but they said, well, we'll pay you mileage to keep you coming up. So that's, and now it'll be 17 years at the end of August. So it's just incredible how, again, that verse that Dr. Munseth shared, that God gives us the desires of our heart, that I've been able to be an educator and a pastor, a lay pastor. But when I say that, sometimes people get upset with me, like, no, you don't, there's no such thing as just a lay pastor. A lay pastor is serving God in multiple ways, and that's a good thing. So, it's been a wonderful experience for me.
I have to ask, in thinking about balancing all of these callings, all of these vocations, and for a while, I'll ask about this later, but for a while you're coaching basketball as well. You've got a family that you're raising at the time. How did you balance it all? How do you balance all of those callings and how do you prioritize?
Well, I think one of the things that helped me balance things was my wife. You know, Jennifer is a wonderful helper to me and wonderful mother to our children. And she stayed home with the kids until my youngest was a year from starting kindergarten. And so really gave them, and that's part of why I needed the extra jobs. So I delivered papers for about 15 years. I coached basketball for 8 years, did the fill-in preaching here and there. And so all of those things, you know, kind of, as educators don't make a lot of money until you, and even in administration, the headaches are more and the money is more, but sometimes I wonder if the headaches make it worth it, you know, at times, but I have found that I do enjoy the administration side of things too. So,
changing gear just a little bit, I want to ask about your time coaching basketball. You referenced on your resume, you implemented an award, a team award called the Rutabaga Award. What is that?
So when I was here at Bible school, I played on the basketball team. Kermit Nash was another person, Justin Jones, Johnny Greven. There were, you know, quite a few of us, and that was my junior year. And then senior year, Nathaniel Olson and Jeremy Zeltinger, and it was just fun both years. Just loved basketball. But when we needed a steal, somebody, and I don't know why we started it. It might have been me that started it, but it might have been Kermit too. But somebody would yell out, "Rutabaga!" And so then we'd just play on our toes, you know. And there's a difference between, when you're playing basketball, if you're playing defense on your toes versus on your heels, there's quite a difference in what happens. And so that's what we called out when we needed a steal, when we needed a stop. Somebody would yell out Rutabaga. So when I became actually it happened before I became a coach. My brother was playing, and I was, at times I felt like he wasn't putting his heart into it the way that I wanted him to. And he's 6'10". So he's a big guy, and they had a good team. And so before, I think it was one of the regional games, I wrote him a poem about playing with the heart the size of a rutabaga. And so then he pulls this rutabaga out of his duffel bag and thought it was the dumbest thing he'd ever seen. And the poem that went with it, he didn't think it was all that cool. But his teammates gathered around him and they're like, oh, that's awesome. So it, you know, his teammates helped me survive probably that experience. Maybe would have changed our relationship a little bit had his teammates not thought it was kind of cool. So then when I became a coach, I started using a Rutabaga Award, and I had a certificate I'd fill out, and it was always given to the player that had played with the heart the size of a rutabaga. So it wasn't always the person who scored the most points. I remember one time, I think Rachel Gerner went here to Bible school as well. So her older sister, Katie, played for me. And Katie went into the game, you know, and wasn't a scorer, but there was one game where she turned around and shot a shot and it went in. And the next time down the floor, she did the same thing and it went in again. And so she had 4 points. And so we gave her the Rutabaga Award that day. And, you know, just it helped my team just really appreciate each other and really enjoy the season. I had a lot of girls that didn't go on to play varsity basketball, but they looked back on eighth grade basketball and were really, really excited about it. So I used the Rutabaga Award most of the 8 years. There was 1 year where I didn't, just because I had some players on the team that were kind of frustrated with each other. I used it again as a principal and just gave it to the person that I thought was putting their heart into teaching. And then again, I stopped using it because it made a few people frustrated that they weren't getting it or that somebody else had gotten it. And so I just let it kind of fall by the wayside. But it served a purpose for a while and still is a fun story. So
that brings us back to your calling as an educator. Talk about that transition. You in Grafton, in Grand Forks, you're in the classroom, but then going to Hillsborough in the principal role. Talk about that transition from the classroom to administration.
Sure. You know, I think one of the things you'd mentioned, that sometimes students at Bible school have a tough time discerning what God's will is or what God wants them to do. And I think in the transitions that I've had over the years, sometimes it's a frustration that kind of builds within a person that leads you to a different calling. And so what I mean by that is, when I was in Grafton, when I was in Grand Forks and had taught Spanish for 5 years, I was like, I have to be done doing this. I have to do something different. And so that led me to that crossroads of, do I go to seminary or do I teach in a classroom? So I ended up teaching in a classroom. As I taught in Grafton, I got to about year 7 in Grafton and started getting a little frustrated with some of the things that were happening with the administration above me. And I thought, you know, maybe it's time for me to be a principal. And so I, you know, took some steps to start working on my degree and had an opportunity. I applied for a job in Grafton and didn't get it. And, you know, that can be it was a frustrating day. It was a hard day because there were things that happened with the interview and after the interview that I found out that just made me feel like, boy, this is not how I wanted things to go. But then there was an opening in Hillsborough, and I applied for that position and got that job. And just how God was at work in all of that. You know, sometimes, you know, my frustration led me to say, I want to be a principal. But then God was still in the background directing the path, right? That he closed the door in Grafton, but then opened the door in Hillsborough. And we sometimes make light of that. But when you look back on your life and you see those different transitions, even 2 months ago, if you would have asked me, do you want to be the superintendent? We heard your superintendent is retiring. Is that something you're interested in? And I told people, no, I'm not. I love being a principal. I play music every day at recess, you know, and I'm outside with my students every day at recess. I Christmas season, I play Christmas music at recess, you know. And so there's a lot of things that I really love about being a principal. But then the more I thought about it, I thought, what do I want for my next superintendent? Well, I want a person with integrity. I want a person with moral character, with an understanding of who they are and who God is. You know, and not that in a public school all of that rises to the top all the time, but I still want somebody that I can trust and that I know is looking out for what's best for students in our school district. And so the more I thought about that, I thought, well, maybe that's what God wants me to do. You know, maybe I should think about it. And so then as I started talking to my wife about it, we decided we'd, you know, I'd take that step and didn't tell the children right away. You know, I kind of kept it from them over Christmas and even until I was 2 days from applying before I told them, you know, just because I felt like they didn't need to worry about it. But then the interview process, they interviewed 3 people and offered me the position, and I'm excited about it. The one thing I shared in the interview, and I want our school to be the best reflection of who we are as a community. That's part of my vision for the school, that when people say, what's Hillsborough like? Somebody might be able to answer, come and see our schools and you'll know exactly what our community's like. And that's the, you know, where does faith tie in? Faith is everywhere in our lives. So when you think of a vision for a public school, what's the vision for a public school? The public school vision would be that it would be a safe place for students, safe for them emotionally and physically and safe for them spiritually, that they're not going to be derailed in their faith through anything that happens at our district.
For those who don't know, take us through the day in the life of a principal. So you reflected on a few things that you've done, but what is a typical day for you?
Sure. There is no typical day. No, as an educator, there are typical days, right? As a teacher, a classroom teacher, you get to have typical days. Yeah, there's little things that, you know, come along, little bumps in the road and things like that. But as an administrator, I would say there are not 2 days that look the same. You know, one day you'll get to work and you'll have three people waiting to visit with you, and they come into your office and visit with you. And then there's three students that need to be visited with because of what happened at morning recess. And then I have team meetings, usually once a week with my grade level teams. So that's something that's kind of normal, but yet it can get derailed at any point too with what's happening with students. So parent phone calls, parent emails, things that the state needs done. There's just a lot of putting out fires. There's a lot of just finding your way through each day and getting as much work done as you can. But there are a lot of mornings I wake up at 4:30 in the morning and work on things too. So, you know, and that's the part people don't see. You know, they see you go to work at 8 in the morning and leave at 4, between 4 and 4:30, and say, well, that seems like a fairly easy job. But they don't see the mornings when you're getting up and working on things that need to be done, you know, and you're doing that work. And that happens in a lot of professions. You know, I find as a pastor too that my best time for studying is 4:30 in the morning, because there's no interruptions at 4:30 in the morning. There's nothing that derails that at least 2 hours of time. So, yeah, so I would say there's no 2 days are alike as a principal. And that's part of what makes it kind of fun, you know, but it also makes it challenging. There's times I don't look at my email until 1 o'clock in the afternoon, you know, so, but that's okay.
Is there anything that we haven't covered today as you reflect on how the Lord has worked through your various callings and these opportunities that opened up? Anything else you want to share?
Well, I think the one thing that I would share, sometimes I think at Bible college, and sometimes pastors too, get kind of down on education, you know? I mean, there's kind of a feeling sometimes that our education system is coming off the rails, or the wheels are coming off. And I think we need to shift that a little bit, that, you know, education is a wonderful thing. We want our young people, we want children to be literate. We want them to have an understanding of how to do math in the right way. We want to have an understanding of science, and we want a good understanding of our history. And those are things that most people learn in public education. And so I would encourage people just simply to, I've thought about becoming a delegate to the Republican State Convention in North Dakota, just to ask the politicians to kind of stop beating us up. I've invited people that are old friends of mine. So people that I knew when I was growing up, I've invited them to come see my school. They're now in politics in North Dakota. So I've invited them to come see my school, and they spend, you know, a couple hours walking around the school and seeing what we're doing. And they always leave with one of the men that I asked to come and tour the school. He left and said, I'm going to tell my daughter to move to Hillsboro. And I think that was encouraging to me. She hasn't done that yet. She was a student that I had when I was a senior in high school. She was a third grader, and I taught her Sunday school class. So it would be fun to see her move to Hillsboro, just to see that circle get completed. But I just think we have to – are there things we can adjust in education? Absolutely. But we also have to be careful not to make it so that education is – it's an easy punching bag. When you look at data, or you look at books in the library, or you look at all kinds of various things, it's easy to beat up education and say, what are they doing? You know, but really, there's a lot of schools and there's a lot of administrators that I have a great deal of respect for, not because any of us are doing everything perfect, but because we're trying to make children's lives better. I have a lot of students with trauma. You know, they've experienced a lot of trauma, sometimes by third grade, and just relating to them and trying to encourage them and trying to help them see that things can get better. You know, yeah, things have been tough, but things can get better. There's hope, right? There's things that happen in life that get us down. I see the same thing with my teachers at times, that there's times that they go through really difficult circumstances in their lives, and yet you just try to come alongside and say, you know, I'm here. If you need to visit, if you need to talk, if you need me to put my pastor hat on, I sure can. And I've had teachers come into my office and say they need that pastor hat. I've had them come in and say, can I talk to you like you're my dad? You know, and absolutely. And we shut the door and we have a son to dad conversation or a daughter to dad conversation. And those are the good things happening in education. You know, so there's negative things, but there's negative things everywhere in every profession. You know, you can't find a profession where there's not an influence of the world. And the same is true in education, but boy, there's a lot of good people in education too. So I don't know if that makes sense or not, but sometimes I feel like we're an easy target, and I wish we weren't. I wish we could, you know, figure out a way to just celebrate what we are doing well, because we are doing a lot of things well. So, yeah.
Beautiful picture of how God is working in the lives of so many families through this type of calling in this area of life, through the teachers and paras and yeah. principals and superintendents. Anything else on the superintendent role as you look ahead to that shift?
I don't know what I'm doing, so I think if you ask me in 2 years what being a superintendent is like, I'll have a much better understanding and be able to paint a much better picture. But I think the job of superintendent it's a lot of public relations. It's a lot of setting some goals and trying to help your teachers figure out how to achieve those goals. I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to just being a positive force within our community. Because I think sometimes we, as a school, have, I don't know what the right wordage is. Schools are always in a battle. It's a battleground. And so what we present to the community, what we present to our parents, even to our students, we want that to be a positive experience for everybody. And sometimes it isn't. And so we have to figure out a way to work with people and work with community members.
So, John, you've helped your 6 children navigate that season of getting ready to graduate from high school, wondering what to do next, career, calling, wondering what God has for them. What advice would you give to other students who might be listening to this? What advice would you give as they prepare for a future calling?
Don't ever be afraid. Don't ever be afraid. God has a plan. And even when the plan seems to be not working out the way you want it to, God still has a plan. And he's going to see it through. You know, I don't know. I look back on the times when I didn't know what was coming next. And those are some of the times where the best things came next. You know, that my time at Drayton, Schaeburg, that has been an incredible season for me and my life. You know, 17 years at the end of August, and you know, I know those people. I've baptized their children. I've performed weddings and funerals, and you know, I've just had the opportunity to be part of their life, and they've been part of my life for 17 years now, and it's been an incredible opportunity for me. So don't be afraid. Don't be afraid if God calls you to be a lay pastor. That's okay. If God calls you to be a full-time pastor, great. If God calls you to be a garbage man, wonderful, right? I mean, there's no calling that God can call you to where he's not going to watch over you. And that's what I've learned. I loved being a basketball coach for 7 of the 8 years. The 8th year I didn't care for so much. That's why I decided to be done, you know? I got the opportunity last year at Christmas time to coach the girls team that was playing against the Bible College's girls team at the alumni game. And, And that was a blast. I was able to coach my two daughters again. And I just had a lot of fun with that. But, you know, so God just, and now as a grandpa, you know, what a wonderful opportunity to serve God as a grandpa, you know, and I don't know, there's no calling that God calls us to that he gives us the desires of our heart. So it's a good thing.
Well, John, thank you for being here today. Thank you for speaking so clearly about the value of work and perseverance and seeking the Lord's will in all that you're doing. And just appreciate you being here today.
Well, thank you for having me. Thank you.
Listeners are invited to visit flbc.edu/media for additional interviews and resources. As always, we invite students to start here, go anywhere, grounded in God's Word.